Let's talk about movies. This is Kenny for my brain. If you wanna talk movies, well, guess what? We on the same thing. You gotta watch this podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to You Have to Watch This Podcast. I'm Alan.
And I'm Devin.
And Ryan will be joining us shortly. He had some computer issues after we hit the live button. So 2 weeks in a row of technical issues. Happy 2024, everyone.
We get it, man.
But we're going to start off the show like we normally do, talking about things that we watched in pop culture before we dive into Ryan's pick for the week, which is the 2017 Netflix film, The Ritual. Yep. And I don't have any graphics pulled up because we had to scramble for this setup at the last second, but I watched the Golden Globes, or at least most of them. I missed the beginning of the Golden Globes. I think because I was watching this movie.
Did you go back and rewatch the opening monologue?
I did not, but you did. And I know Joe Coy has gotten some flack for some of the jokes he made. I heard some of them. I heard the Barbie one about like Oppenheimer was based on this book, and then Barbie was about blah blah blah. And I'm like, yeah. that's not a great joke. I saw the Taylor Swift joke, which is just like, eh. There's so many better jokes you could have made. I feel for him because it's evidently he got the job 2 weeks before, which is not a lot of time to make up something for that. I like Ricky Gervais hosting though, so I'm not really the best judge of.
Like, he won this year, though, didn't he?
He did, and he wasn't there. I wish he was, though, because Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes is fantastic.
It's always something. So how was the rest of it, though? Because so I only saw little bits and pieces afterwards, and I don't know about you, but the sense that I got is that they were very rushed in their speeches afterwards. Was that consistent?
I think that there's always a little bit of that at shows like that. It seems like some of them were, but then they also took like long moments to do bits. Like the whole Kristen Wiig, Will Ferrell bit went on a lot longer than the other ones. So I think it was just a weird night because evidently in LA it was freezing.
Was it really?
Yeah. So everyone was like cold going in there.
Which, I mean, it means it was in the 50s. Like, that's what it means.
Yeah, and like, in those dresses, like, you gotta, like, it's gonna put everyone in a weird mood. It was a weird vibe. There was a weird vibe going on from what I was seeing.
Are award shows on their way out? I ask that because, like, every time an award show happens lately, it seems like everyone just goes, it was weird, they're trying something new and different, and it didn't work.
I think they will. I think the format is trying to adapt to social media and like pop culture. Yep. And I think if you keep the format the way it was, you're better off. Like, get a host out there to do a strong monologue or a musical number. The Golden Globes never had the musical numbers, but they always had like the fun monologue.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you keep it simple and keep it classic, it's how it's tradition and it works. I think there are too many award shows because in the last 3 days or since the weekend, there were the Creative Arts Emmys, which is all the technical stuff for the Emmys for television, the Golden Globes, and then the Governor's Awards, which are the honorary Oscars, which were surprise hosted by John Mulaney.
Wow. Okay.
So he got to introduce like the awards. I know one of the recipients was Mel Brooks. So,
that's incredible. Wow. What a cool moment.
Yeah. But a lot of things that I watched, one at the Oscar at the Golden Globes, Succession, which you and I watched, won.
Yeah,
like, cleared
did.
All of the acting television dramas, spots
as it should have. It was so good.
My favorite moment of the night was Kieran Culkin telling Pedro Pascal to suck it.
Yep. That was my favorite part.
In true Kendall Roy, or not Kendall, what was he? Which Roy was he?
Which one was he? Why am I blanking on this one? Roman. He was Roman.
Roman Roy.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer won, Barbie won for, yeah. I think the weirdest thing at the Oscars was like the cinematic achievement and blockbuster award, which went to Barbie, but was introduced by Mark Hamill.
Weird.
Because he's Luke Skywalker. So why not?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, you get him to do it, but yeah.
My favorite thing to come out of the Golden Globes is Mark Hamill's there. And you know who else was there?
I saw this. Natalie Portman was there.
His mother. So yep. Luke Skywalker got to meet Padme Amidala for the first time because he had, the two of them had never met.
I can't believe they've never met. I just picture like every Hollywood star just bumps into each other all the time.
I mean, I feel like Mark Hamill and Natalie Portman are in different circles outside of Star Wars. Like they're in different circles. Speaking of Star Wars, since we have to vamp some more, did you hear the news about Star Wars?
There's going to be a movie and a series two of a show.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
How do you feel about this? So tell them what the movie is.
So the movie is supposedly called The Mandalorian and Grogu, which
I really hate that,
which I don't know. That's probably a working title. Because the statements that I've read is the Mandalorian and Grogu are going to the big screen directed by Jon Favreau. It doesn't actually say the movie is going to be called The Mandalorian and Grogu, which if that's the title, you could do better. You could do worse. Because at least the Mandalorian and Grogu will be in it. I still don't know why it's called Rise of Skywalker.
All right, fair.
So that the Mandalorian jumping from Disney Plus to the big screen, and then they've announced that a season two of Ahsoka is in development.
Yep.
So did they
say at all what Mandalorian movie is going to be? Is it going to be like a season four? Is it going to be like a filler between seasons?
That's the rumor that I've heard. It's going to be a season four. It's going to be
okay.
They adapted what season four was going to be, like the outline for it, and made it a feature film so they can go bigger and
took out Jack Black from it.
I mean, I like Jack. I like The Mandalorian. It works for what it is, but if you want to just streamline it and tell a story, like that's probably Star Wars deserves to be on the big screen. I love that it has shows. I love the Clone Wars. I love The Mandalorian. Book of Boba Fett exists. But I feel like Star Wars deserves to be on the big screen. And I'm happy to see that these characters that everyone has connected with are making that jump.
That's a good point. This is the first one that started as a TV series and then hopped its way onto the big screen, isn't it? This isn't the first one that went the other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay. That's actually really cool. Now that you said that, that makes me more behind this than I was before. I'm still kind of burnt out on Star Wars stuff, but this makes me excited for it, I think.
Well, there's not going to be too much of it this year. Like, Disney's kind of resetting a lot of things, so...
Good.
There's some animation stuff. I think there's Wrecking Crew, or Skeleton Crew is coming out this year, which is the live-action show from John Watts, who did the Spider-Man movies for Marvel.
Skeleton Crew the zombies one?
No, it's... Oh, and then there's the Acolyte, which is the dark... the dark side main character from the High Republic. So there's like two shows, but two shows in a year is a lot better than what we were getting. Cause last year it was Bad Batch and The Mandalorian and Ahsoka and Jedi Adventures.
You get the kids one, right?
Yeah. You get the kids one. Like it's been a lot, and it's a lot with like, if you space it out a little bit more, it's not going to be as bad.
Yeah.
So
I think you're probably, because then it like builds anticipation for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not back to back to back start. Wait, didn't Obi-Wan come out last year? Kenobi come out last year too?
That was the year before.
Ah, gotcha. It's all. Yeah.
But it was like, because you had that, like we haven't had a new Star Wars in a while, like since Ahsoka, like we're going a few months without Star Wars, which is nice. I like that. I like that with Marvel. Like Marvel had What If that they dropped in a 9-day period. And now Echo's out, but it's all out now. Like, you can just go watch Echo, which I have the poster for up behind me, because you can't see it in my shot, but it's a painting of Wilson Fisk. And Wilson Fisk is one of the best parts of the MCU, because I can say that now, because all the Daredevil and Defender stuff is canon.
Right. All the everything is canon now, right? Like, everything Marvel released.
Only thing they have not said is canon now is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, that's the only thing that's not being addressed as canon yet.
What? That was, like, the one thing that was supposed to be canon.
It's supposed to be, but it also wasn't. So...
Okay.
Which I'm of two minds of. I liked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. once it figured out what it wanted to be. Like, once they started getting into, like, time travel and all this other different stuff for the show, I enjoyed it a lot more than I liked the first season. We're like, hey, we're going to fight Hydra. Or no, we're going to be a procedural show with S.H.I.E.L.D. Wait a second. No, we're not, because the movies are doing this thing and S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't exist anymore. So what are we going to do? Once they found their footing, I think if they don't want to put it in the canon of the MCU, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be like a multiversal thing. But yeah, all of the Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Punisher are all canon.
Like both Punishers?
The series on Netflix.
Okay, so they didn't claim like the Ben Affleck Daredevil?
Not to the MCU proper.
It's multiverse, right? It's
what they have said, and I'm glad you brought this up, everything that has been Marvel, like all the Daredevil, Ben Affleck stuff, the X-Men, all the Fantastic Four movies, including the one that never got released. The unreleased one. Anything that was made with Marvel is part of the canon of the multiverse.
Oh my gosh.
Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man and Andrew Garfield.
Well, yeah.
And like all the Sony stuff, all the Fox stuff, the Ang Lee's Hulk, it's all canon to the multiverse. So by them saying that, there's a chance that everyone can show up in Secret Wars. So
I liked Ang Lee's Hulk. Is that weird?
I haven't seen it in a long time. And the last thing I remember about it was very dark and I could not see what was happening. I think I saw it at the drive-in.
Was I there with you? I feel like I remember this.
I think that was before we started hanging out.
Maybe it was. I don't know.
That was 2003.
I know that I've also seen it at the drive-in. So maybe we just went at the same time.
Maybe. It's entirely possible. Let me see if I have... I don't have the slideshow.
It's okay. I mean, we can start talking about the thing that I watched and not have a poster of it, because it's actually really appropriate for the thing that I watched that you don't see the poster of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you didn't... Did you watch a thing or was this listening to a thing?
I didn't watch a thing. This was a podcast.
Okay.
So I so, so very seldomly, Alan, listen to podcasts that aren't us. Mostly because I just love the sound of my voice, but also because I don't engage with it too much. But I just listened to this one called Ghost Story, and like us, it's available on any podcasting platform that you so choose: Amazon Music, Apple Podcasting, Spotify, Pandora, you name it. But it was actually super good. So it wasn't like a weekly thing like we do. It was a 7-episode series. And I tried to explain the plot of it to Romana, and I ended up sounding like that Charlie Day Pepe Silvia meme.
Ryan's back.
Hey, okay. Ryan's back. I'll wait till he hops on.
Keep talking. Keep talking.
Okay, gotcha. Welcome back. So, oh wow. So anyway, I was talking about the podcast I listened to for the We Watch This part of it, and. Mm-hmm. It was this podcast called Ghost Story, and I tried to explain it to Romana what this is about, and I sound absurd, so I'm just going to read a section of this for you. It's the host, who's a seasoned journalist who doesn't believe in ghosts, but when he was a kid, weird things happened in his bedroom that he didn't like initially think was ghosts. He discovers years later that occupants of his house in his room have been visited by this ghost of this faceless woman. Now, he never was. But he'd have people be like, oh, there's a faceless woman in the house. It also happens that his childhood bedroom is next door to the house of his wife's great-grandmother, who was murdered in that house. So part of it is a ghost investigation and them being like, all right, was this anything at all with a ghost? But the other part of it was them kind of deconstructing this murder that happened to his wife's great-grandmother. And his wife, by the way, is... the actor Hugh Dancy, if you guys are familiar with him. He was in the Hannibal TV show.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Black Hawk Down, Ella Enchanted, King Arthur. It's his sister, and his great grandfather is this like massive like star in the UK. He was like the UK's first spy. He's like this very well-known figure, and they are debating whether or not he murdered his wife and what that effect has essentially on the family. It was incredible, this podcast. I've never binge listened to a podcast before. Like, usually I'll like have like something on, like music or something, when I'm like commuting or when I'm like making food. But like, I was hooked on this. It got me good. So I recommend it a lot.
And you said it's anywhere you can listen to podcasts?
Just Like Us.
Just Like Us.
Hey. Just Like Us.
You knew exactly what I was going for. Cool. I haven't listened to a bingeable podcast in a while.
Did you see Serial when Serial came out?
No, I never got
into that. Oh, wow.
I do like the audiobook plays on Audible. So there was one with John Cena and Kate McKinnon.
What?
Yeah, what it was like him playing a quarterback that was like retiring and had to move back home or something. I think she played like his agent or something. It was weird, but like I like things like that, and I have like the one podcast I listen to every day, which takes up so much time, and then I don't listen to anything else.
Well, what is it? I gotta know.
Oh, I listen to the Ralph Report.
Oh,
which
yeah,
I've told
you
about.
Okay.
Because it's just a daily. It's just part of my routine now. But I've been keeping an eye out for like other podcasts to listen to. Because I listen to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and occasionally Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. I gave Smallville podcast a try, which is just overwhelming because I'm rewatching Smallville. So I have to go back and listen to the podcast as I watch it. So like, I'm just going to keep watching Smallville. Cause they just finished season 3. So I have like a whole 3 seasons of podcasts to listen to.
Wow.
And I'm not sure how I feel about the whole rewatch podcast culture thing that's happened.
Yeah.
Tune into our rewatch podcast where Devin and I sit back down and for its 20th anniversary, watch Lost.
Every episode.
Thought about like, think about it. 20 years though. It's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. And I always wonder how that holds up. I think about it often because that show is a big part of what got me into like TV and movies like this.
Yeah.
Was it for you, Ryan? I don't know about this. Did you know any? Did you?
I was not interested in The Lost at all. And to be honest, I'm sorry, Alan and Devin, both of you, but I'm still not interested in it. Even after I've heard you guys, like, after I've heard you guys talk about it forever for the past almost 10 years, like,
Ryan, I love you, but you don't have to be there. We can do it.
That's fine. That's fine. Devin and I have done enough of our own, you know, covers, show things that you guys can have your own thing.
There's enough for me to go around.
Yeah. Well, we need to come up with a clever name for it. Yeah. Hurley's Ranch Dressing Tub. Ryan, you watched The Meg.
Yes, I did.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
You didn't tell me that.
Okay, so here's the thing. It was made, 2018, 2017-ish? Like, it came out 5-6 years ago. I am not a Jason Statham fan at all. Like, I always, no matter what I see him in, I always see him as like a dad trying to be funny, but seriously. And everything he does comes off that way, and it just doesn't work for me at all. So my wife told me 3 days ago. She's like, I think you might actually like this movie. And I'm like, it's Jason Statham. I'm not going to like it. And she's like, no, seriously, you need to watch this. So I did. And it reminds me of like all the 80s and 90s just dumb action movies. Like, it's not completely over the top. It actually reminded me a lot of Deep Blue Sea. Like,
oh,
it's
fun. Okay.
Like it's just ridiculous enough to still kind of be like, okay, I can go with this storyline. And I really enjoyed it for what it was. There wasn't anything, like I said, completely over the top and dumb. There wasn't, it was not Fast and the Furious level stupid.
Ah, oh, shoot. Okay.
The second one, we watched the trailer for the second one because I was like, well, maybe I might like the second one. As soon as the trailer was over, we both looked at each other and said, no.
How many of them are there now?
There's only two. There's okay. only two.
How many books are there, though? Because I know there's
I had
more
no
books.
Idea these things were based off books.
Yeah.
What?
All the great shark movies are based off of books. Yeah, I've never seen those. So yeah, I'm not a big Jason Statham fan. But
nah, me neither.
You see, the thing is, like, I saw Cranked, you know, that movie that kind of, like, pushed him into stardom a little mm-hmm. bit in the U.S., and I think that's what did it. Because that movie is so ridiculous and was so ridiculous for its time. And then I've seen some other stuff that he's done that's, like, not so serious. I'm always, like, whenever he is doing a serious scene or he's, like, talking someone down or he's being, like, all, like, macho, I always feel like he's going to crack a smile after a line. Or I always feel like he's going to be like, oh, yeah, nah, and just totally break character. And because he's always on that verge of me thinking that he's going to do that, it ruins literally every scene that he's in.
You feel like he's in on the joke, or that, like, he knows, like, he's almost like nodding and winking to the camera.
I don't, maybe that's the term for it. I don't know. I'm going to assume that that's probably what I'm trying to describe.
Well, what you're describing is how I think almost any, at least the ones I've seen, Jimmy Fallon in SNL skit went, where, like, Fallon breaks, like, almost way too much. Sometimes Fallon lets you know that he knows he's in a skit. He doesn't completely commit to it sometimes. He's fun. He's fun to watch in it, but he's not always 100% in it.
I think I have the perfect example. You know how, like, tell a me. Dad will, like, lean over you and, like, say something serious, and then it'll hang for, like, 5 seconds, and then he'll smile and go, ah, no, don't worry about it, and then just kind of, like, pat you on the back to kind of, like, scare you a little bit to make you think that he's being serious, but he's not. And, like, that stupid, like, serious dad humor thing. Like, I feel like he's going to do that in, like, every scene.
I mean, that's fair.
And, yeah. But this movie is good. And I don't really have that issue with him in this. Like, I have almost everything else I've seen. So I highly recommend anyone who's been timid about this, like I have been, just dive in. Don't worry about okay. the second one. The second one doesn't exist. Just dive into this one.
Was that a real pun? Did you do that on purpose?
Yeah, I did.
I'm so proud of you, Ryan. That's awesome. That was a really good one.
And Finn.
Oh, wow.
They have a Roomba in the movie that's in the, like, base that they're in, and it's got a shark fin on it.
Of course it does.
Of course.
But it's such a nice touch. Such a...
All right. Maybe I will watch it like I watched my pick for we watch this. I told you guys last week that I got a projector for my basement, and it came, and it's wonderful. And one of the first movies that we watched on it, like, I tested it out with some other stuff. Just I put on, like, Spider-Man No Way Home to see how the Statue of Liberty stuff looked on it. But one of the first movies my wife and I watched on it was Casablanca, which let me tell you, one of the best ways to watch Casablanca is on a projector. Because the way I have it set up is, like, even if I'm sitting up in my couch down here, like, completely, like, not reclined at all, the projector is not blocked. You cannot see my shadow. If I stand up a little bit, you can. Like, it's, like, just right over the top of it, so it doesn't get hit with a shadow. But Casablanca on a big screen, especially after when Harry Met Sally last week, like, I think that's why we watched it. Very good on a projector screen.
That's incredible. Well, you have a very high def projector. Was it, this is going to sound like a silly question, but I mean it in all earnestness. Was it too high def for that movie? Like, because sometimes you get this weird uncanny thing.
So we started watching it on, we have it on DVD. So we put that in the PS4 and watched that. Hmm. And it was in 4:3. We're like, maybe it's just an old DVD. So we found it on Max and put it on Max, which had the 4K restoration. So it wasn't in 4K, but it was cleaner and the audio was better. And it looked great and sounded great, minus our just using the speaker on the projector. But it worked very well. Like, I'm very happy with something that I bought off the TikTok shop.
Is this a movie that you guys are going to make me watch at some point, or should I just watch it on my own?
I mean, maybe. It might be something that we watch on the show.
Okay.
That's why I don't want to dive into it too much. But it's a classic. Like, I knew all of the lines from it. Like, here's looking at you, kid. Like, it was very, like, there were moments of like, ah, yep, that's the thing.
There they did. They did it.
Yeah. And it was very, very interesting to watch right after watching When Harry Met Sally, which references it a lot. And in not only the movie, but in the music as well. But now that we threw the idea out there, I really want to rewatch Lost on my giant screen for a podcast.
That might be very cool.
I mean,
and this is what we're obsessed with now. This is the thing.
It is. I'm just typing in the numbers to my keyboard right now. Another thing.
Do you still know the numbers?
4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42.
23, 42. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And what do they add up to?
Oh, I don't know that.
A polar bear in the basement.
Neither did the writers.
Well, that was to both of your responses.
Yes. Another thing that I watched on the projector this week was Ryan's pick for the show, the Netflix film The Ritual. Ryan, go ahead. We didn't do an introduction to the film at the beginning of the show, except for that's what we're talking about because you weren't here. So go ahead and take it away.
Okay, so The Ritual was a 2017 movie. It is a British film. I think it debuted at the Toronto Film Festival, or Quebec, some Canadian film festival. People are gonna probably go after me for saying some. But anyway, Netflix then picked it up. What?
The Tim Hortons Film Festival.
There we go. Tim Hortons Film Festival. And Netflix picked up the distribution rights, and that's why it's on Netflix and has been on Netflix since it became available. The director is David Buchner, who, for some real hardcore horror fans out there, he's the one that did the VHS movie in 2012. He also did Southbound, which is a movie that I referenced during one of our, like, you know, we're watching this segments. But this is his first, this was his like first real like feature, not like a collection video movie or like a kind of like a quasi short film like Southbound was. Basically, a group of guys have a traumatic event. They go to honor their lost friend, and they go to Switzerland, and they hike this trail. And the one guy decides to have him do a shortcut, and they run into a Nordic god, and all chaos ensues. So my first interaction with this movie was like 4 or 5 years ago. Kristen had seen it. She said, "Hey, you might like this." I watched it. I really liked it. And it's been on the back burner on my list for us to do for a long time. So I was like, you know, we're just going to do it. So there's a lot of meaning in this. I love that you can actually, that anyone can really apply any type of traumatic event that they've been through. And this movie can mean something personal just to you. And I will deep dive into like my interpretation, the director's interpretation, other people that we know's interpretation, and hopefully your guys's interpretation into this, if you have one. So that's me. That's my history with it. Have either of you guys heard about this before, this movie, prior to me bringing it up?
Just from you talking about it, I may have heard something about it when it came out at the festivals. What was it, 5 years ago?
2017. No,
7 years ago. Jeez.
Yeah, don't do that.
Welcome to old age, guys.
I mean, 2020 doesn't count. That wasn't a real year. But yeah, I hadn't really heard of this. I didn't know anything about it going into it, except for like you sent the meme for it that I'll post when we share the actual episode. But beyond that, I hadn't really knew. I didn't know anything except trees and hiking.
Yeah, trees and hiking.
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a bad friend because Alan said that he heard it through you. I don't even remember you talking about this, Ryan. I don't even remember that.
In your defense, you weren't on the show in 2017 yet. So
yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I didn't know if you. Well, I didn't know if you talked about it like last year, and you were like, "Guys, the ritual's coming," and like I just was like, "Sure, Ryan, whatever," and like was doing whatever.
To be fair, like. The number of Netflix horror movies that Ryan makes us watch, they all kind of blur together at some point. So.
Oh, I want to talk about that. I'm going to put a pin in that.
Okay. Okay. So before we get into the beats of the movie and then eventually the meaning, overall, what did you guys think?
Devin, you go first.
Okay. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. I love this movie a lot. I think it gave me like Midsummer vibes partway through. It gave me some like, I don't know. It was psychological enough that I liked it. It almost felt like he was kind of aping the director of like Midsummer and Heredity, but like in the best kinds of ways. Cause there were certain scenes that I'm like, this feels like Heredity. This feels like Midsummer. And I love that. I love the design of the monster in this movie. I love there's so much good in this movie that I'll talk a lot about it later, but I really, really, really enjoyed this.
And to make it even better, this movie was made before those two.
Was it?
Yeah. Hereditary was 2018 and Midsummer was 2019.
All right. Well, that's very cool. Because it really gave me those vibes. And, like, while I was watching it, I'm like, he just watched both those movies and said, I'm going to do it better. But he didn't.
Real quick aside, Devin, you just mentioned Hereditary and Midsummer. Have you seen Beau Was Afraid?
No, okay. I haven't. Have you?
No.
Have you, Ryan?
Have seen what movie?
Beau Was Afraid. It's the third movie from Ari Aster with... No. Joaquin Phoenix. So
no. It's like Last Night in Soho for me, where it's by a director I really love, and there's no reason I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen Last Night in Soho?
I haven't seen Last Night, and it keeps popping up on like Netflix or whatever streaming service it's on. Like I should be watching it, and I just keep saying no, which is just it's a character flaw at this point.
Okay. I'm glad I know that now.
just a character flaw.
Yeah. I thought this was okay. It's not my cup of tea. I did like how they kept revisiting the opening events of the friend dying and how they incorporated that into the woods stuff. There was a cool moment with the monster in the background that I really liked. It reminded me a lot of. It's funny you say VH, like this is the guy who made VHS, because I know there's like a connection to like the area in Maryland where they made Blair Witch, because that was like the same area and so like some of the same crew.
Oh, fun.
So I got a lot of Blair Witch vibes from this, which is cool. The monster design was cool. I liked it fine, but it wasn't my favorite. You know me. You know, I don't.
I know you.
I don't do this. Like, I don't.
It's okay. It's totally okay. And for better or for worse, I just want to say that I nailed both of you on this.
Yeah, did you figure that's what we land?
I told Kristen right after we got off the show last week, I was like, Alan's going to say that it was okay. But there were moments that he really liked. And Devin's going to say, this has so much meaning that I love it. So I get to tell her that I was 2 for 2 on this one. Okay, so, Devin, with your experience, the opening of this movie, with like them at the pub, talking at the street, they talk about going places like Amsterdam and Berlin and like, are these all places that you hear people, and to use a British term, go on holiday? Is this something like, are these places that people bring up, like honestly bring up to go to?
Yeah, so to the point where it's actually a little deeper than that. So the parts that they bring up are like, or the places that they bring up are the places that they go too much. Like, they, as the British people, go way too freaking much. Like, Amsterdam had this campaign because too many Brits go to Amsterdam to do exactly what they said they do in Amsterdam. Smoke, drink, all of that stuff. To the point where Amsterdam had a campaign last year that said, don't come here. If that's what you want to do in our city, we don't want you here. Because that's what British tourists do in Amsterdam and in Munich. And all of the places that they mentioned are the very stereotypic British places to visit. So, like, it goes a step beyond, like, you know, them just casually mentioning places to go, to the point where, like, they hit all the greats. Like, the only place they didn't hit was they didn't hit Tenerife or Gran Canaria, like, those islands. But, like, the rest of them, and they got them.
Okay, because there's so much from doing the research on this film, there was so much stuff that I realized that, like, even though I really liked this movie, and there's so much culturally that I didn't understand that, like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know enough to be able to ask a question of stuff that I don't know, because I don't know.
Oh, what, you know, you, it's understand? Like that level.
No.
That's awesome.
You know, as in, like, they're talking about vacation spots. I just took it as they like to go places. I didn't know that those were, like, stereotypical British things to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, so they're, what, ostensibly in London, right?
Yeah.
They're ostensibly in London. All of the places that they mentioned are at most an hour plane ride away. Like, that's, for them, a faster holiday than, like, driving to Scotland or, like, going to the Peak District or the Midlands. Like,
yeah,
that's more realistic and sometimes cheaper than anything in the UK.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so fast forward. the tragic events happen. Alan.
Yeah.
You don't live in the UK. You live in Pennsylvania like I do. But it's very interesting to see a Pennsylvania-type liquor store being depicted in another country where all they sell is hard liquor. What did you think of that scene? Of just, like, what they showed with the main character reacting the way that he did to his friend basically getting murdered. What did you think of all that? With, like, how, with, like, the lighting and just the change of scenery?
Alan didn't like the movie, so we're going to have him talk about the lighting of the scene.
No. I'm just trying
we'll
to
throw
think
some
because
softballs,
I mean, like,
at you.
You are our more technical person.
Yeah.
Because, like, you went to school for all this. Like, you know this stuff. So, like,
what did
you think of that scene?
What impresses me about that scene is how dedicated they were to recreating that set and all the different other times that they used it. Because it's very spot for spot. Like, it's the same thing. That scene plays out very quickly. Like, I think I had to rewind because, like, wait, what? It reminded me a lot of the bottle shops in State College, which is not something you have around here. But it's something like, it reminded me of bottle shops in State College or bodegas in New York. It just reminded me of that kind of vibe. Smaller corner store with just booze. And I think it's interesting to me that they end that scene with him hiding. It surprised me that the robbers didn't see him hiding, because they're both obviously standing there, and he's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to do the Homer Simpson meme and back up behind this shelf and no one's going to see me. But it's very fast and quick with how they depict the death that is, like, the starting point of everything. What baffled me the most is, like, they're doing this trip to pay tribute to him, but it's only been 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, why 6 months? That seems like such a weird time for me. Like, I you would think a year would make more sense, but why 6 months? Do we know why?
I thought I thought Devin, that's how though. I thought they picked the trip, like, because he was like, oh, maybe we go for a hike, and like that was like they were kind of pre-planning, like how in the same way that like Romana and I are planning what we're doing for the summer now, like maybe that's what they were doing, and they go, you know what, we gotta go on his trip, like that's kind of how I took that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I took it too, especially with the timeline. It's like, look, it's like that happened. They grieved.
Yeah.
They got back together at some point and said, you know, we need to work out our work schedules, and there's four of them. Like, we need to pick a time to actually go out and do this. And that's and they wanted to do it sooner rather than later.
I guess for me, what was confusing is it looked like they were going out to a memorial that they built for him on a spot. Not that they were going out to make one.
Yeah.
That's what threw me. Like, okay, so they did this 6 months ago and they're back here to pay tribute. Don't forget to
take out. I guess I didn't think about it that deeply.
I muted her and she still talked.
Hey, it's time to do your trash, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. If that was the first time they're doing the trip, it makes more sense than what I was thinking it was.
It's okay. But yeah, so to get into that, after that scene where they're in the liquor store, they come to it, the tents, and it's like 6 months later, and they're on the hiking trail in Switzerland, which, side note, was actually filmed in Romania. So,
of course it was.
Looser labor laws. That's exactly why they did it.
I'm very sure.
So they're on this trail. And they decide, I forget, Dom, the angry one.
Yeah.
He hurts his knee on the normal trail. So Hutch, and the reason why I know their names, because I have them written down, and this is for later. Hutch decides, hey, look, there's our thing that we need to go to. Let's just cut the trail and just walk straight there through the woods.
This is such a dumb decision, by the way. Like, I think that, like, if anybody is, like, familiar with hiking, the second he's like, let's not follow the trail, let's go that way, and you know that they're amateur hikers, like, everyone's head should have been in their hands. Like,
and that's,
what are you doing?
And that's the key point, amateur. Because,
yeah, oh, very much so.
Because, I mean, I do not do or orienteering, but I used to. I can use a map and, I can use a map and compass, and I can keep us on a straight line. But in that situation, would I do say, hey, let's just cut through the woods? No, I would not say that. We're going to stay on the trail so that if we have to carry you, it's going to be easier. I don't care if it's an extra day of hiking. I don't care.
I think part of the reason I had trouble getting into this one is I worked on a film in college that was about a group of amateurs going off on the wrong trail in the woods and getting lost and being hunted by a killer. Like, it was,
oh wow.
I'm not going to say what the film was. It doesn't need the publicity. even though it was on TMZ like a year ago.
What?
Yeah, I'm not diving into that on the show. I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I told you in the moment, but yeah, so that, so, like, having worked on a film that's kind of like this, like, that was my first on-set experience. It was very familiar to me. It was like, okay, yeah, I know how this is going to go. They're going to find a cabin. Things are going to happen. Someone's going to disappear. Like, yeah, it's familiar. It's very cliche in spots.
Yeah. I get that. It is. They go into the woods and it's horrible things happen. It starts to rain. They find a cabin. The cabin has a creepy humanoid antler thing in it. They all have nightmares. They wake up. They decide to keep going when they shouldn't. Yada, yada, yada. They run into a bunch of them die. They run into a village. The village tries to sacrifice them. Guy runs out of the woods. So I tried to punch that in as tight as I could.
Wow.
What was your guys' favorite moment from when they entered the woods until the last guy, survivor, runs out of the woods at the end?
There was a moment, and I can't remember where it was, but there's a moment where there's a like a bunch of trees behind them and just like fog, and they're they walk off frame, and then you just see the monster in the background get up and walk, like following them. That's my favorite moment. That's where I shut off the movie and it's like, okay, that's the movie. Like,
we're good. We're good.
That the monster design on that was. I read an article that had an interview with the director, and when they were working with their creature creator, that was one of the first designs that this guy popped out when they were trying to like describe what they wanted from it. And they pinned it up on the wall as, this is our impossible dream that we can't do, and we need to get as close to this as possible. And after months of talking, they were just like, we have to do this because nothing else is coming close to what this is.
Wow.
So they made it work.
Can we talk about the monster for a second, or do we want to do
Let's do it. It's great.
The best way I can describe it, like if you had me describe this monster to someone who's never seen the film, it would be, okay, so imagine Sid from Toy Story had a bunch of Lord of the Rings figures. And put them all together. Like, that's what this is. Like, it's a more mythological fantasy Sid's toy that he's going to strap to a rocket and blow up in the backyard.
Yeah.
It's one of those monsters that, like, I got really in the woods with, like, where did this thing come from? Is it a god? Like... because it almost feels like it's like some like alien being that has a rough idea that like some things on Earth have hooves and some things have heads and arms and legs. Don't worry about where they go. They just all work themselves out.
It's like a Beast Wars Transformer that stopped halfway through.
Yeah, it's exactly it. I mean, it's incredible. I love the eyes in it. Like, I think it's such a compelling monster that like, this is like when you had us watch, it was the Haunted House movie. It might have just been called Haunted House. I want to know more about this monster. I want to know, like, I want like more of this monster. I want like previous hauntings of it. I want like a Prey style movie with this monster.
So, before I get into that, Devin, what was your favorite moment between going into the woods and exiting the woods?
Yeah, man, there's a lot. There's a couple that stand out to me. I love the scene in the attic when he wakes up and burns everyone in the attic. Just like how creepy that is and the designs of everyone. I love that moment. I like the moment where they're like sacrificing the friend and he sees his wife come out of the trees, but the wife is the monster. Yeah. I thought that was very cool. And like the transition between the two. I also, two more. Sorry, this is a lot.
That's fine.
One of them, there was a, this might even be before when they went in the woods, but there was one jump scare in the whole movie that actually got me. And it was the sound of the zipper of the tent unzipping.
Yeah.
But it was so loud and so sudden that it made me go, oh.
That was right at the beginning. Well, not right at the beginning. That was right when they jumped to Switzerland.
Yeah. It was such a weird, but then there was that one. And then I think my last favorite moment was, it might just be the shot and scene composition where you don't really get a sense of what's happening to people, but the movie really lets your imagination wander with it in a lot of ways. And one of those ways is when they take the friend out and the lady's like, don't worry, he's being prepared for sacrifice. And all you hear is his screams. And then like you watch the friend fall asleep listening to his screams. Like, that's really evocative. Like, you really fill in the blanks in your mind in that scene. And I like that the movie does that.
Yeah. So this movie was based off a book. So in the book, I'm just going to give you a few things because I don't really know that much about it. One, in the movie, the beast is described as the bastard son of Loki.
Oh,
from,
okay.
you know, Norse religion.
Yeah.
I had a feeling Loki was involved.
So, in the movie, that's what the beast is described as. And of course, Nordic gods can like morph their appearance and this and that, so whatever. In the movie, it's a he. In the book, it's a she.
Oh.
So that's different. And instead of like having like a tribe of like weird normal aging immortal witches, that is that's how they're described. It's metalheads. It's
really
Nordic metalheads.
Do they at least have old woman that won't stop chewing on something?
She has hoof feet, actually, in the book. She has hoof feet.
What?
Yeah, because she's, like, the only one that hasn't turned into, like, a living corpse that's, like, in the attic.
Weird. Cool, but weird.
Yeah, so my favorite moment, or two moments, is one when Phil is found in the room with the, like, weird mannequin antler thing in the attic.
Yeah.
Because like he was the most terrified of it to begin with, and then the fact that he was the one that comes to like out of his like walking nightmare in that room, so good. And then my other favorite moment in this is when Luke is in the attic and he realizes that all of the corpses around him are alive.
Yeah.
And my wife and I always laugh at that moment because it's like, you could see in his face, he's like, oh my God, they're alive. Like, he doesn't say it, but you can tell in his face that he has that realization. And then he just boop, touches one with the torch. Like, there's yeah. no, like, second of thought. He's like, oh my God, they're alive. And then he just lights it on fire.
Which is, like, such a as good you reaction. Should.
Yeah, as you should, yeah.
He, I mean, he acts very realistically in a lot of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
Well...
Yes?
Okay, so I wanted to talk about what Devin just said. Like, he acts yeah. very realistically through most of this. Are we counting the... Are we counting the opening scene in the liquor store? Like, do you think that's like, what would you guys do if we were in that situation?
You're in
a liquor store. They're getting robbed. Do you hide behind the counter or do you just give them what they want and let them be?
So I had, you know how you kind of have that like story about yourself that you tell yourself, right? Like, I'm going to be the one that if this happens, I'm going to run up. I'm going to defend my friend. I'm going to throw the liquor bottle. I'm going to do whatever, right? I've been put in this situation before, and I freeze. I just do, and I know that about me, and I don't love that I'm like that, and I don't know that the fact that I know that I'm like that means I won't be like that next time, but I know that honestly I am that person and would freeze and hide and hope this situation worked itself out totally fine. And, yeah, I know that about me.
It's something, just like Devin said, like, you hope you're one way, but then you don't know what your fight or flight mechanism is going to be until it happens. And you could be someone who prepares for it your whole life, and then when it does happen, you freeze or run away when you want to fight. I honestly don't know.
I know the one thing that I would do differently in that situation is just give them what they want. Like, things are replaceable. Well,
yeah, man, that's like, the one thing. Like, if they want a ring, give him a ring. Like,
yeah,
because that's what it was, right? He just wanted a ring from
it. It was his wedding ring.
Fine, take it. Like,
yeah,
I mean, not that I don't like my wedding ring. I love mine, but like, things are replaceable. My life, take it.
You are not.
Yeah, yeah, that's 100%.
Rubber.
Is it rubber?
Rubber.
Oh, you got the smart ones that'll snap off, not snap your finger.
Yeah, because of my work.
Yeah. Well done.
So I want to get into what the meaning of this movie is.
Just so you know, we're down to 7 minutes until an hour. So
okay. That's fine. We'll do what we can. So I see this movie as a metaphor for grief. Mm-hmm. So this guy is blaming himself for what happened, and the woods of them going through the woods is basically him fighting with himself. And basically, you know, like people say, like, you know, like he's out of the woods, he made it. And to me, that's the first thing I thought when I saw the end of this movie. Like, he's out of the woods, he made it. He's out the other side. But the trauma of getting to that point, he lost all of his friends. in that metaphor. That, like, through his process of grief, he realized that he really wasn't friends with any of them anymore, and that's why they're just poof. Before I get into what the director wanted, what did you guys take from this movie, message-wise?
Do you want to go first, Alan? I'm solidifying one thought of mine.
I'm of the same mind as Ryan. Like, it seems pretty straightforward to me that he's dealing with his grief. He's already, if not physically, like, emotionally lost those friends. They don't trust him. They think he's responsible. They're all grieving, but through the process of this, he ends up losing them all. So it seemed pretty straightforward to me.
Oh man. Okay. So I took this as oops, all metaphors. So I don't even think that they're real friends in the woods. I think they're metaphorical ideas of how he thinks his friends care about him. And the monster itself represents his own shame for what he's done. And the killing of the friends is him gradually letting go of the idea that he's had that the friends don't like him anymore and not caring what they think anymore. Essentially, it's that, like, well, I need to stop thinking what this person thinks about me, impaled on a tree. I need to stop thinking what this person thinks about me, impaled on a tree. Like, that's how I took it all.
Okay. So we all missed the mark on what the director wanted. So the director wanted to make a movie about something that he saw was an epidemic with men in as they got into their mid-30s and older. And that is that men become lonely. They lose their friends, mainly because the way that he sees it as is that as men get older, men typically have a harder time re-evaluating friendships and adding aspects to the friendship that update them. So basically, these guys were all friends in college. They all met when they were a certain type of person. And then it's like 15 years later, and at this point, they're all growing apart. Mm-hmm. And because of how men are raised typically, they don't have the emotional knowledge to be able to reevaluate those friendships and build on them to make them more than what they were originally on, like the original bonds.
Yeah.
Which is funny because a year later, after this movie came out, there was an article posted from a research company that did actual, like, studies on this, and it's true. Men have are much, much, much more likely than women as they get older to lose friends and not gain any more, like, meaningful ones besides acquaintances. Wow. Yes. Sorry, my cat just wanted to add in.
I mean, as men in our early to mid 30s, let's be generous. I see that. I can see that.
Yeah,
I can't
take
majority rule.
So
I see that. Like, I get where that's coming from. Because things do change at this age. A good friend of ours is gonna be a dad, and like, it's weird to think that. Like, what does that mean for our friendships going forward? Like, it is. Things in our lives are changing, and it is different. So I can see that angle as well.
Yeah. So the director called it a crisis of masculinity and crisis. Not, you know, masculinity is like, ooh, want to be this big and tough. Just like, masculinity is just like being men, and the fact that, like, we are more often than not unable to be like, hey, you know, like, we've been friends for a long time, we're starting to get on each other's nerves a bit more, maybe we need to, like, I don't know, start hanging out more, to try to, you know, like, add more stuff to what bonds this friendship than just what we did 20 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, an example that I have of my, like, recent life is that I've had friends that, like, I made in college that, like, I watched do keg stands, right? And now they have multiple children and a career, and they're looking after like real human beings, and they're no longer that person. And I kind of love that, not because I didn't like the keg stands and didn't like the partying, but I love the decisions and the growing and the changing in this human being that had to happen to get to this point in their lives. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool. And I actually kind of, you know, I you know, this is going to sound super sappy, but I like really cherish the friends that I've had for a very long time, A, because I've moved around a lot, but B, because like I've got to be a part of that life at so many points that I think that's really cool. Okay. So maybe I don't have that, but I understand that notion of like, well, he's my partying buddy and he doesn't want to party anymore, so I'll be partying solo now. Like, I'm sure there are movies based on that exact premise.
Mm-hmm. And like, this is one of them, you know, like they're basically all growing apart, and it's basically Luke realizing at the end, like, I'm me and my wife, or me and my, like, whatever, my dog at the apartment, like, and that's it.
That's a sad ending.
It is, but and then before we go, I came across one other interpretation, and I love it.
Tell me.
Go for it.
Luke and his four friends, well, except for Robert, because he was killed at the beginning, are all stands-in for all of them stand in for the five stages of grief. And as the characters die off, it is Luke moving on through that level.
That makes sense too.
Yeah.
So like Pierre, Hitch is denial.
Yeah.
And what was he doing throughout the whole movie? Hey guys, come on. We got to go. It's just one more day. We'll be out of the woods. Dom, your knee's not that bad. Get back up. Like, he's always denial. In denial about what's going on. And then he goes. And then the next one that, you know, dies is Phil. And Phil stands in for depression. I mean, his hood's always up. He doesn't really talk a lot. You know, he's the one that, you know, is always bringing up, like, the doom and gloom of the situation. And then Dom, anger. The dude's always angry about everything.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that one's obvious.
Always, always, always angry. And then Luke himself stands in for two things. One is bargaining, because he's constantly trying to save his friends. He's trying to bargain his way out of the situation. And then, you know, finally acceptance, and just accepting the fact that this happened, and he needs to forgive himself. And getting out of the woods was that he's through the woods moment.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
So
that works.
So like, this movie is great, because I feel that if you like the horror genre, or, you know, you like the outdoors, and you don't mind, you know, someone's backpack strap flipping outside and inside between each cut, which happened in at one point.
So got that.
You got that?
I did not. Okay.
This movie is just, it's a really good metaphor for a lot of stuff, and it's why, and I'm gonna end it this way, Devin, this way of doing metaphor is superior to then the Babadook, or whatever that name is. I like, this is the way it should be done, not the way they did it.
Alan, have you seen the Babadook?
No.
We're gonna watch it at some point, we'll compare. It'll be a direct comparison. It's not gonna be my next pick, but yeah, okay,
yeah.
Fair.
I was hoping to do that. Because I really want to point out why I like this type of a way of doing it compared to not doing it that way.
All right. 2024 metaphor throwdowns. Let's do it. I love it.
So that is it for the ritual. You guys will be getting your candles in the mail. Make sure to light them at 3 a.m.
Good. That's what I want.
So Ryan, I've got a challenge for you.
Okay.
Let's take a break from horror movies for a bit.
We're exhausted.
Devin,
it
finally happened. Yes. Alan, I will.
The last few you've done, like the last three, it was Gremlins, Event Horizon, and I forget the other one, but.
Yeah. So I'm so surprised it took you three. That this is exactly why I've been doing them. I've been waiting for you to tell me to stop. I've been waiting.
The other thing is, like, your next pick is in February. So Valentine's Day. Let's start thinking romantic.
I'll find. So. There's a horror movie called Valentine.
There is.
Well, that does it for this week's episode. Next week, it's Devin's pick. Devin, what are we going to have to watch next week?
So listen, I really loved last year when we did the Oscar lead up.
Okay.
And I know the Oscars haven't been announced yet, but I'm predicting that one's going to make it on there. So I'm going to predict us watching one. On okay. Friday on Apple TV Plus, Killers of the Flower Moon releases. So I'm going to have us watch Killers of the Flower Moon. Lily Gladstone actually won a Golden Globe for her performance in it. I'm hoping carries on and where I actually landed on an Oscar nom.
That's one that will definitely get some Oscar nominations.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we'll start sprinkling in some Oscar movies starting next week with Killers of Flower Moon. And then the following week, I'm going to have something special planned because the following week, the show's on my birthday. So
yeah, it is.
Tune in for my birthday party show where we make it. Oh, wait, I know what we're going to do.
Make Brian watch all of Lost.
All of it. All six seasons.
All of it.
I was that face say, isn't from Lost. I just want you to
I was going to say at least the pilot, but no, we're not going to do that. But yeah, tune in next week for Killers of the Flower Moon. You can listen to it on all major podcasting platforms. You can watch us live here on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can also listen to all episodes. Check out our website with rumrunnerspodcastnetwork.com and check out all the other Rum Runners Network podcasts. Until next time, for You Have to Watch This Podcast, I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And we will see you next week.
You sound so sad, Ryan.
Droopy dog.
Because I looked up Killers of the Flower Moon, Devin.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
3 hours and 26 minutes of a crime / Western.
Directed by Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese.
And I've seen the trailer for this. And do you want to know what I said after I saw the trailer months ago to Kristen?
What?
I can pass.
What?
But the good news is, the good news is, Ryan, he's letting you watch it at home, so you don't have to watch it all at once.
Oh, I can definitely tell you this is not going to happen all at once. And I will tell you guys how many times it took me to get through this movie. Well, not how many times, how many segments it took to get through this movie.
I hope you love this movie. I hope it's your favorite movie of the year.